So today we continue our studies of Bach in the tantric tradition of Kashmiri and Shaivism. So we covered two big topics. One is Paravak and how Paravak creates this outburst from Vimarsha, which is part of the consciousness, separating itself from Prakasha, which is light of consciousness. So Vimarsha is a power which moves out of light and contains within itself cosmos. Since it is one consciousness, the description is very beautiful. Vimarsha is as if whispering within the consciousness, to the consciousness, about manifestation. It is known to the light of consciousness what is to be manifested and how, in the most potential way. So once this outburst is taking place, then we move into another level of Pashyanti, and that is our sign. So we have Paravak, where the Artha and Shabda are one, where the meaning and the sound is one and the same. But then there would be outburst to the level of formation, to the level of creation, Trirochanas, most probably, into the Svar world, into the overmental levels, where this division will take shape. There will be a gap between the sound and meaning, where on the level of Madhyama, finally, they will take shape, and form images and form sounds will take separate realities. Though they still correspond to the same truth. And here on this level, Abhinava Gupta is using the terminology of Idanta and Ahanta. Idanta is thisness, and Ahanta is I-ness. So we have subjective and objective presentation of reality. This subjective-objective presentation of reality is very clearly visible in the syntax. And we were discussing this, that every sentence contains the subject and predicate, and can't be otherwise. There is always the major name, and there is always a secondary name. Secondary name explains the major name. So the major name belongs to Ahanta concept, and the secondary name belongs to Idanta, thisness. Without it, there is no sentence. Without Ahanta and Idanta, you can't say much. Because our mind works like this. It recognizes reality by comparing the two. I was using this example in the university when I was studying linguistics, that I can be many things. I can be a teacher, a student, a father, son, and so on and so forth. I can take any secondary name in this creation and become it. But this is I-ness, the subjective presentation oneself as such, as different, as anything else. So that as anything else is another part, is Idanta, thisness. Moreover, it goes even farther, even if we take verbs. We will see that in Yaska's terminology, there is no kriya yet. Kriya is a verb as an action. In Yaska's vision, the verb is called akhyata. And it's quite interesting. Akhyata means secondary name, explanation to the first. So if I say I am, so I have to explain what I am. So explanation will be I am a student. Ah, then it's clear what you say. Otherwise, if I say I am and leave it, it won't be clear. It's not clear what for I was making a statement. Because every statement from now on, from Pashyantivak, would be a certain creation. It's an outburst of that vimarsha, of the consciousness, to know itself as such, as different, as something else. So because of this outburst into something else, that something else becomes a predicate to this subjective perception. Make sense? These are psychological terms. Yes, we are looking at it in psychological terms. Because the whole Tantra is nothing but that. Later it becomes, of course, something else. We will speak about signified and signifier. But you will see already in this subjective terms, Idanta and Ahanta reflect the next stage, which is in Bhartrihari's terms is used as Vachya and Vachaka. Vachaka is signifier and Vachya is signified. It's a deep thought. It needs contemplation of some kind. If we can see that Ahanta is relating to the signifier, there is Idanta relates to the signified, we will solve a very difficult problem of relations of the signifier and signified. It was always understood in the Western tradition that signified is primary to the signifier. Yeah, this is good. I like this. Because that shows that there is the beginning of understanding of that, what it could mean in the Vedic or Tantric tradition. The signifier is not secondary in the Indic view of things. It belongs to the subjective expression of truth. It creates the signified. In the Western tradition, in Western materialistic, more scientific thinking, there must be an object which we name after, later. That object is primary, whatever it is. The being has to be there. Yes? And if it is not there, what we are naming then? So the naming is removed from the object so far that it is not part of the object at all. It's only a token for us to communicate about the object and nothing more. In the Tantric tradition, it is seen differently. It is primary. It creates the object. Or at least they are both inherent in the same consciousness. So we moved to that level, what we call Madhyamavak. As you remember, last time, do you have some questions about last meeting? All those Mahapashyanti, Pashyanti, all those levels which Abhinava Buddha described so beautifully and in such a simple language. Do you remember that material? It's all here, you see? Abhinava Gupta compares the process, the psychological process of memorizing to this process of Pashyanti coming down, as if something in us wants to know and that want or aspiration to know calls for that flash of intuition. Without that flash of intuition, without that aha, we can't know. There is no communication. That aha is supporter. When in English we ask, do you know what I mean, is exactly, we are pushing towards that flash. We want to see it happening. And when we see, that happened. Doesn't matter that that flash happens in your own context, which might be very different from mine. You may understand completely different things, but the flash took place. And because of that, that's already enough for communication. When Mother describes communication, I was surprised to read how she speaks about it. She says that actually it's very rare that we truly communicate. That's all, as you were describing last time, this communication is only that. It's on the surface. We are never touching deeply what we really mean. First of all, we mean very little. We hardly mean anything. That's why our communication is like this. But even if we mean deeply, something deeper, it's nearly impossible to bring that into the awareness of another because he has or she has her own context in which she understands those things. The flash will be there for both of us, but it will reveal different things in that darkened room. We will see different pictures, not the same. When I read that, I understood that communication is nearly impossible unless we make an effort and rise higher above our own understanding and see what others really mean. Do we really want to know what they mean? Do we really have time, strength, consciousness to perceive what they perceive? We hardly can understand ourselves. So that is the problem of communication. But what I am aiming at with this kind of talking is that pratibha is taking place. And it gives us our own knowledge. It's not necessarily the same knowledge, but since it is flashing in the same moment of time, in this communion between two speakers, it brings something in common to both of them, and aha takes place. So today I was discussing this with Siv about how pratibha, this flash of intuition, comes. That it is always coming to us. But since we are living on the surface, our all consciousness is on the surface, we do not really register this flash. It comes to the call which we make, but we are not registering that call. It is the call in the heart, or in the soul, which is always made to that higher spirit to come. And they have relations. Our soul has relations with that flash or that lightning coming from above. They have constant relations about which we are hardly aware on the surface. But when we start calling that on the surface, in our mind and vital and body, the flash comes to the surface. We can feel it. We can sense it. We can think about it. But what I want to say, this communication is constant within, beyond the veil, within ourselves. It just bridges to our surface, and we can become aware of it. So when Abhinava Gupta describes that when he has to go to the village, it's a big pashyanti, it's a big flash. Where it comes, why he should go to the village. There is some reason for him to go to the village. And that reason, that intention, is somehow linked to other intentions and reasons which are widening and coming to the whole concept of manifestation of consciousness in this way. So he gets that glimpse in that particular time and space and the causality of that particular motion that he has to go to the village. And this magic of manifestation takes place. But that is already on the surface of our consciousness. In the depth, he may not know why and how, and fully how this happens and takes place. In the depth, he is not perceiving fully the manifestation of the whole, only that particular need or call to go to the village for certain reason. So when it comes to the Madhyama, Madhyama literally means mediating or middle, which mediates between undifferentiated and differentiated levels of the word. It is still a projection of Paravak, together with Pashyanti. Only on this level the language finally appears as the division on phonemes, words and sentences. It's quite interesting that Abhinava Gupta says that in Pashyanti there is no division yet. There is no morphology, syntax, there is no text. There is only Icha, a will power, which flashes down, a need, a kind of intuition, an urge to know, an urge to do something which is not yet differentiated, not yet known to our mind. We already perceived it, but we do not know what it is yet. It needs Madhyama. It needs the level where it will dress itself into language, whatever it may be, whatever language we offer for it as dressing. We may offer a language of the artist, or the language of the poet, or the language of the dancer, or the language of the thinker, philosopher, and we will dress it in a particular way. So because we are dwelling within this language and calling for it within this language, it will come to that particular language with a particular request of ours to satisfy that request. So it will match with language. That's what happens when the scientist is dwelling on his topic and thinking how to find the solution, and the solution is not coming. What he is building up around that need of Pashyanti to flesh all his language, Madhyama. He clarified all the terminology, all the relations, and something he cannot see, that particular link, that particular meaning, and he waits for it. And it comes when he's least expecting it. It is the same process with every researcher. They all describe this wonder of discovery, disclosure of meaning. When all the ground was prepared, all the soil was nurtured, all the seeds were planted, you have to wait till that break will take place. So Madhyama is mediating speech which offers this language, this ground, and it is on this level that Idanta and Ahanta will be clearly defined and balanced. Now if in Paravak there is no distinction, in Pashyanti Ahanta dominates over Idanta, the word dominates over the signifier, is creating its signified, then on the Madhyama level they are equalized, they are harmonized. They should be on the same level. If they are not harmonized, we cannot understand the statement. If I say to you, Rod was joking that now there is a tendency in American English not to finish your sentence. always, you know.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, right. You know? So it invites you to finish the sentence. I'm starting as Ahanta and I'm inviting you to finish it as a Danta. And that, through that kind of device, communication takes place. It doesn't matter what I will say, because whatever I say is meaningless anyhow. So I can really invite you to finish my sentence, because only then we will feel oneness. But if that equilibrium is not taking place, there is no possibility for pasyanti to flash. There is no meaning. So if I say that I am a kind of maybe, to certain extent, a student, it doesn't make full sense. Of course, it tells many things of my attitude and many other things, but not really in the sense of the statement. So if I'm not fully equalizing that I am a student, full stop, but I am on the way a kind of wanting to be or seeking to become that particular thing which we call a student, then we lose our statement. So on this level, the language finally appears, or the word finally appears, as a division on phonemes, words and sentences. We have bigger units, we have smaller units, and the smallest ones. It is on the Madhyama level. We have building bricks, we have meaningful first small units, we have quants, atoms, and we have bodies, sentences, texts. If on the level of pasyanti it was still involved, enclosed, samvartita, it was inherent within it, so here it is bursting out. Then on the level madhyama, it is unfolded into mental distinct categories of language, grammar. So madhyama deals with these categories of grammar, categories of the mind, yes, predicate, subject, object, time, space, causality, and so on. It is on this level only that the distinction between vachya and vachaka, the signified and signifier, takes place. Now, when these two are combined, is the substance of sound, being a material of language, and the expressive and creative element, vachaka, and the creation, that which is to be expressed by it, the vachya, they together represent the power of the goddess called Parapara, supreme, non-supreme. Para and apara. Ahamta and Idanta, they are in equilibrium, Parapara. The intention to know and the object of knowing are in equilibrium. And this is the essence of Madhyamamaka. It is always presumed, that's why it is so important to speak correctly, syntactically. Because there, this equilibrium has to find its place. These two elements are aiming at two different things. One is aiming at the objective content, Idanta, and the other is oriented towards subjective expression of it, Ahanta. And thus they create the whole physical universe, Vishwa. The objective universe is born within and by the world. On the individual level, it is cognized as awareness in speech, and language, as well as differentiation of shabda and artha, word and meaning. It is the level of the Saussurean sign of grammatical structure, which according to him is a proper subject of linguistics. Now what Saussure did, it was interesting. He arrived at this conclusion that linguistics is to deal only with this syntactic structure. All the rest does not belong to linguistics, neither meaning nor sound. So meaning and sound were excluded from the topic of linguistics. What was left was structure with categories. And he was speaking that there would be in the future a new science of meaning, which he called semiotics, which came to be exactly that, as he predicted. But it can't really deviate from that same syntactic meaning. It stays within the same realm of studies. So the place of Madhyama, according to Abhinavagupta, is intellect, buddhi, where the element of impersonality still dominates the particularities of manifestation. We are dealing still with subjects which belong to those categories, yes, mental categories. We are not yet speaking on the vaikari level. It's still on the level of language. And language is a little bit beyond time and space. Yes? Categories. Though they are in time and space, they are still one foot, we can say, is beyond time and space. Since Abhinavagupta is using the terminology of Sankhya, buddhi, buddhi is an intellect, luminous intellect, which is not operating by senses. It has its own way, it's a pure reason in Kantian terminology. So, on this level, the element of impersonality still dominates the particularities of manifestation. It has a character of cognition, jnana shakti rupa. Now, it's another definition which he gives, that Madhyama is jnana shakti rupa. So cognition takes place here. If on Pashyanti level there is the Icha shakti rupa, she has the form of the intention or the willpower, on this level the cognition takes place. Why cognition takes place on this level? Because there is already signified and signifier. There is already subject and object. There is already the qualifier, idanta, for ahanta, for the subject. This is the cognition. If I say I am a... So where is the cognition? The cognition is in the predicate. I have to identify it, I have to cognize myself as such. So it's on the level of this syntax that the cognition takes place. Otherwise, it doesn't need any cognition because it is cognizable to itself as such. Jnana shakti rupa. And it utilizes parapara shakti. Parapara shakti is one piece, is subject, the light of chit, prakasha, and other is vimarsha, which is manifesting the whole world as a predicate to this prakasha, light. Here we have the same projection. We can see parapara. So it is as if consciousness reflects itself on much lower level in the same way. Does it make sense? Mm-hmm. We're speaking about the same thing, only level down. Which dwells on the distinction of the subjective and objective content, of the infinite and the finite, of the transcendental and non-transcendental. The objectivity is growing within the subject, as it were, and the subjectivity is still dominant. Not on Madhyama level, they are already equalized. So when now we come, when it comes to the level of Vaikari, the division of the Vachya and Vachaka elements becomes fixed by the cognitive aspect of Madhyama. We have a sign suddenly. We have a unity of both, parapara. They are suddenly united in some meaningful union. Where they are still superimposed on each other, therefore children, says Abhinavagupta, can learn language connected with objective reality. So it is through objective reality as our correlative we can check all our subjective meanings. That's what we were talking last time, that we are learning language by imitation. We are trying to use those subjective terms and trying to see how they match with objective reality in communication. And if they match, we recognize their validity. But how do we recognize? Not by the mind, but because the flash of pratibha was there, which confirmed that it works. And once that works, then we know that it is the meaning what it should be. Otherwise, if pratibha does not take place, we are never sure of the meaning of the word. Therefore, such meanings like ontology, epistemology, and others are long-term learning experiences, because we never find the ground for communication with these terms. It's only in the universities. And even there, you always wonder how far really that was understood. These are structurally made words. They did not appear out of life. They appeared out of the structure of the mind, and they have that validity. They require the same context. They live as if in the separate reality somewhere in the mind. And if that context was not built strongly enough, they cannot flash. They cannot bring the pratibha. That's why they are kind of handicapped words.
Abstract.
Too abstract. Yes. So I bring this sign again back to us in this particular regard. So Vaikari, the final, after Madhyama, the language, has built the equilibrium of signified and signify into one sign, that we know that outer reality and inner reality, which claims it, are correlated and balanced. The Vaikari takes place. The expression can take place. Otherwise, expression is not possible to manifest. Vaikari is a manifestation of speech in time and space with all the distinct features of language, phonemes, words and sentences. According to the Abhinavagupta, the Vaikari is only a completion of the process of Paravak. It's the surface of the action of Paravak. Completion, which started with Pashyanti, led through the formulation of the elements in the Madhyama and manifested in Vaikari. The Paravak is present throughout the process of manifestation and is always there before and after its manifestation. This is a very important statement. Paravak is present throughout the process. Paravak is present in Vaikari, in Madhyama, in Pashyanti. That's what we referred to as that the sense of being, if the sense of being is not there, the communication cannot take place. That Shabda Brahman is present throughout. The word is not only manifested in terms of speech production, but also in terms of objective reality. So Paravak is flashing with its own objective reality. And all this civilization, if you see, it's built by this Paravak. If you start unfolding it within thinking how all these things came into being, you will see that that was the creation of that consciousness. I was trying to develop this thinking, and it's my recent kind of thinking. But before we go into that, this grand vision, I would like to invite your questions or comments or thoughts.
It reflects exactly what Sri Aurobindo says in the Light Divine. First few chapters of the Light Divine is exactly this, the manifestation from the above and the consciousness coming in down to the differences. This whole entire thing makes complete sense.
Yes, for people from Aurobindonian circle, it makes full sense.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. Mm-hmm.
In the question regarding the question, and it seems to me like that would be moments when the greatest ideas in humanity have flashed through to an individual who eventually was able to formulate it and then help humanity evolve. So when Rod was talking about all the songs, just the fact that he came upon this idea of how it happened, I think that's why I was remembering what you had said, and I thought, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Well, Bergson became famous, but there were others who were not famous in their own time. Socrates was not famous in his time. Oh, well, in his village, yes, in his part of town. But later, it doesn't matter, later, because the flash had such a validity that it took over the whole civilization. Jesus was hardly known. There were so many prophets around. But later, Buddha was a king. He was known. But when he left his kingdom, nobody knew about him. It's only 200 years later. So Sri Aurobindo says, even if Buddha would say nothing at all, and he didn't say much, actually. His action would be as strong as he would say something. It's not in the saying that his action was. It is in the perception of that consciousness which he brought down. So the manifestation can take place not necessarily through talking.
It is said that before the Buddha arrived in the village where he sat for 40 days by the tree, that the villagers sensed a different consciousness spreading over them days before he arrived. That something in the atmosphere of the place already had changed in the atomic, let's say, organization of the lives. That's the myth. That's the story.
Well, it's a very sounding true story, because in India people are very sensitive to these matters. And they really can perceive those changes. in the villages. Villages are very sensitive to this. And there is always some ascetics living near the village, some yogi, whom they bring food and ask him questions or help. So he concentrates and helps the village in difficult times. So that's, I believe it can be true.
About the mind, you know, different qualities of the mind, etc., etc., and it becomes quite arduous and quite. And then all of a sudden it shifts into this kind of lyrical flight of words, and you feel it's, we're moving into something else here, another level of meaning. But the writing itself becomes very different.
It flows.
Yeah, it's all of a sudden you're from this kind of quite strong, powerful, academic, Oxford, Cambridge kind of writing. All of a sudden it opens up into a completely different place. And that's really quite, I mean, in terms of the writing itself, the English.
Yes, right.
It changes dimension. Very strong like that.
I have an experience, by the way, with the same writing of Sri Aurobindo from Russia. His books were at that time prohibited, and it was very, if you were caught before 82, 85, before Gorbachev came to power, there was a very dark period. Andropov and, you know, people were stopped on the streets. And in the cinemas, you sit and watch cinema, suddenly light goes up. And documents, please, passports. If you don't have a passport, what are you doing here? It's your time. Why are you here? And what is in your bag? Let us see. All these things happened. It was all of a sudden. 80s. 82, 83. But I remember the time when all these samizdat, we had a special, we call it samizdat, self-publishing house, where you rewrite by hand, or you type on the secret typewriter, which you only have at home, because all typewriters are also calibered. You can find, you know, special letter is different, so they can be proven that it was typed on that typewriter. So handwriting or typewriting was also dangerous, but it was yours, so to say, your notes. And I remember we started to translate Sri Aurobindo's books. Two things which come very strongly to me. First, that I got permission to receive Sri Aurobindo's books in a particular section of public library with particular paper from KGB telling that I am a philologist, and because I'm a philologist I can have access to Sri Aurobindo's books for philological project. If you are a philosopher or psychologist, no way. You can't have access to those. So as a philologist I went and I got Secret of the Veda. And it was volume 10, you know, this 72 edition. And that volume was never opened, I think. It was always there. So when I received it and opened, that smell of that old book on the shelves, you know, and that yellow paper, and it's good paper, that was enough to touch and to sit. The whole spotter, flesh, flock. I was already there. You didn't have to read anything. And I sat like this for an hour. It was enough just to sit. And you don't need to read. You don't need to open anywhere. Smell, just smell it. And then I left. And then I came again. And I started to read. But spotter takes place also through other means. It's It's not necessarily only reading.
And yes, it was forbidden to read, to buy books of Sri Aurobindo in those times in Russia?
Yeah, well, if you are caught, you are going to
say...
Yes, it was under
the
carpet, yes.
Under the
carpet we had it, yes.
It was a revolutionary...
Yeah, he was called a reactionist. Means against, you know, communistic regime could be used this, you know, idealist consciousness, all these things. There were a few books published by communists. There was such a person, Kostyuchenko, and he published Integral Vedanta of Sri Aurobindo. Integral Vedanta, that was the book. And I loved that book. He was criticizing Sri Aurobindo, saying that he's a reactionist and all that in the preface, because it was always read by KGB. And then he was quoting him, quoting non-stop. And those quotations were most welcome. So...
Yeah. But didn't they survey you, even if you had the permission to read and to have access to those books in your job? I mean, weren't you on a sort of...
No, only that in the reading room. No. There is a special safe. You're closed there. You're given the book. This is your table.
Okay.
It's all under camera. You sit here, you read, you leave. No notes are allowed. No copies, no photocopies. You read, you come in, you go out. You leave the book all in the head.
Understand.
Funny to remember such days. And I remember we translated also Aces on the Gita, very bad translations, the first translation. And I came home and I had first book of Aces on the Gita, this Russian translation. And it was full of mistakes and full of distorted words and so on, unfinished sentences. But that was a revelation. You could finish the sentences, you could... Yeah, I received most of that reading. I swallowed, I gobbled it, that bad translation of Essays on the Gita. So, sporta takes place.
But the perfectionist, you could say, when all this level is
not. Well, yes.
What is the purpose?
The purpose of?
Of Vaikarios.
Vaikari, yes. Sure. Manifestation. But it did manifest already. It doesn't matter that somebody didn't translate it properly. It doesn't matter. It manifested already. It's great manifestation in proper sense. It's already here. These books have that power. Even to connect to them through thinking. Oh, I have books in my home. In Russia, and just look at them or touch them, you know, it's a connection to that meaning. So it happens. It has this power. I can experience it, so I know that it works. And everybody knows who has some deeper relation with books. The best thing for us in Soviet Union was to go to these bookshops. You know, we were. With our eyes touching all those philosophy books, you know, you can't buy everything. They're expensive books. But to go through, to touch, to open them, to see what they say, to reconnect to that search, was important exercise, nearly everyday exercise, going to the bookstore. Yeah. Now, when I arrived to India, I was surprised because I went straight to the bookstore in Pune University, and then the Pune best spiritual bookstore, and like Vak or Shabda. And in Vak also, in Vak it's beautiful, there was the same, all these beautiful books with Khajuraho and, you know, India, all these statues. And then, where is Sri Aurobindo? No Sri Aurobindo. Oh, there, they said, in the corner of the, mm-hmm. of the whole room, there's a corner with dusty shelves, mm-hmm. and all these books were there. Life Divine Synthesis, nobody wanted them. They were those, you know, soft copies, mm-hmm. cheap editions. Oh, I took all of them and sent to Russia. And I was full of these books. I saved them from that misery in that corner. I couldn't believe 80 rupees Life Divine, 60 rupees Synthesis. I couldn't believe. That was a shock for me, that India was not really valuing these books.
It's interesting to talk about the object, a book, that generally people associate with something they can read. But it's interesting to talk about it in its physical, vibrational sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because in healing fields, for example, we use this a lot, where you all touch something and know that your whole knowing knows it. Or just by thinking about something, know that you connect really, mm-hmm. in reality, to it.
So it is Vaikari, mm-hmm. on that level. It's another language. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Once it is manifested, and this is the secret of Vaikari, all the levels are present there.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a book, you have Madhyama there, you have Pashyanti there, you have Paravak. The whole manifestation is there in your hand. You can put it on your chest and feel it. You can soak into it. You can put on the pillow. Yeah, these things are working.
That's what you say to the kids. You put the book under your pillow.
Well, kind of. If you are open, if you are perceptive enough, if you are not skeptical, if you are not on the surface only, you know, believing, of course it's much better to read than to worship the book. But but if you, yes, but if you are open enough,
next to a book that's called When God Was a Woman. You know, and you do all this thing. I know what you create in there. To play, it's like book editing. Creating new words and sentences. Practice.
It's interesting if you put them together very close, you know? And then wait, what will happen in the world? Channel News. Might happen something. Right. So, what I was aiming at with these three levels, yes, I wanted to see these three in three. Yeah? It's an important vision. Meaning of meaning. This is the highest of the most essential part of Pashyanti, that Paravak, first outburst. Paravak expressed as Pashyanti Vak, the intention, the Icha. Meaning of structure. Pashyanti itself, the intention, projects itself within Madhyama Vak, structure of language. Meaning of expression, Pashyanti, the intention, projects itself within Vaikari, a speech. Now, before going into this, maybe I should have made some other scheme for you, because it's not very clear. Maybe I will bring the writing pen and we will make one more scheme. It would be interesting to see how that. Now I will move this a little away for us to see. It's an amazing scheme from occultism, which Sri Aurobindo used in his Planes and Beings And we can look into that. Mother brought this knowledge. Three in three. So these are worlds in the worlds, so to say. What I created here is very similar, because Abhinava Gupta does not make this identification, but he uses this key. Exactly in the same way. Fantastic. So mental is a pure mental. Then there is this universal mind. Yes? Universal, which is beyond, which we call, in Shubhendu's terminology, this would be a higher mind. Then we have that physical mind, which is manifesting the universe. Then we have vital. We have mental vital. It's the element of the mental in the vital. Then vital proper, that the whole universe, yes? And the physical vital, it's all belonging now to the universe. Then we have mental physical. This is what Mother referred many times to. Vital physical and physical physical. So here, if we see these levels, they are very similar to this. Meaning of meaning. That pure meaning which came from Paravak. Meaning of structure, it carries within itself that structure in the vital, which will give later this vital mental, which will regenerate the whole cosmos in a particular way. Projects itself within Madhyama Vak as a meaning. A meaning of expression which projects itself within Vaikari speech. Projects itself. This is important because it is not Vaikari. It is something in Vaikari which is connecting us straight to Pashyanti. In the expression, there is something which connects us in this book to touch. Something connects us straight to Pashyanti. Now, on the Madhyama level, structure. This is vitalistic or syntactic meaning. Structure of meaning, Vakya Sphota. Disclosure of intention in the text, Pashyanti idea. Intention, Pashyanti idea is disclosed or unfolded in the text, in the structure. Padasphota, structure of structure. There is syntax proper, morphology, which connects words in a particular way. Disclosure of intention through the structure of language, in between words, semantics, so to say. Of Pashyanti, which is of nature of language and thought. The structure of expression, Varnasphota. And the final, Vaikarivak, we have an expression of meaning. Now, if we had before the meaning of meaning and meaning of expression, we have the expression of meaning. Vaikari expresses the intention of Pashyanti in a meaningful way, selecting sound expression suiting for it. Now, I was sitting at this on this this sentence quite a long time, and I didn't find yet suitable sentence. But I found this word, selecting proper sounds to fit that expression. Selecting sounds. This is Vaikari. Selecting particular way of sounding it. Particular color of sound, particular rhythm in expression, and so on and so forth. Expression of structure in Vaikari. Vaikari expresses Madhyama as Prakrita Dhvani, articulated sound. An expression of expression, Vaikari expresses itself as Vaikrita Dhvani, natural sounds. It is that what is given to us, the apparatus of articulation, with all its abilities and disabilities. how we can utilize it for the expression. So what is interesting in this scheme, I will come to it again, it's at the end I'm just making a projection for the next time. We cannot really see it now, but we will see next week what it means. And the first thing what I want to say here to connect to the next discussion would be, it is this number 7 expression of meaning with which the whole linguistics has the problem. Selecting of sounds for the expression of particular intentions. The selection of the color of language to express particular intention is here where linguistics cannot say anything. It's this what I call for myself as the system of etymons, system of root ideas, sound ideas, sound powers, colors of speech, which we select in order to express certain intention. Here, general linguistics cannot offer anything on this ground. They don't see this level as existing altogether. We can dwell on it later. It's a big thing, but kind of to puzzle you a little bit. And what I was doing before coming to this class, I was writing this, trying to figure out 4 different movements. Being to know, knowing oneself as such, one being, wanting to know, knowing to want, and knowing to be. Being to know is that paravak, knowing oneself as such, one being. Wanting to know oneself as another being, pashyanti flesh. Knowing to want, knowing oneself as wanting to be another being. You can find better formulations. These are first formulations. And knowing to be, knowing oneself as another being. It's as Sri Aurobindo says, if I know that, it's because I have become that. I identified my consciousness with that to know it. So knowing oneself as another being is the final stage of identification. Well, that's enough for today, I think. If you have some comment or something, it's fine. But if not, we can have more time for tea and discussions in the corridor. Was a little bit heavy or something? Heavy? Not very heavy. Not yet, at home. Where is my... All right, so then, yes?
So, would you say that experiencing oneself rather as a fixed identity, but rather as a process in formation, would be what Sri Aurobindo would express in what you said there? That he could only know what he was becoming?
No, he says what he can know only that what he has become.
He can only know what he has become.
So what he brought into the light of his self-identity and identified himself with, he can know. We know only what we identify our ahanta with idanta. Idanta can be known only as identical to our ahanta, our I-ness. Otherwise we can't know. How else we can know? Only through knowledge by identity.
But if we experience ourselves as a process rather than as a fixed entity with personality, a story, blah, 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 all the identities, constructs that we have,
This is the way to liberation. If you have that fluidity of consciousness and can see yourself as always different and not lose yourself.
Not good bad.
Good bad is a qualifier. All right, so we will end today.